Good morning. We continue our study of Consciousness Transformed, the 1963-64 Hawaii Hotel Talks, given by Joel just 10 months before, well, this talk today was just 10 months before he made his transition into the invisible, where he now lives and teaches. And so I feel that it was very important, and indeed he said that all Infinite Way students must assimilate the wisdom, the knowledge, the truth in these talks before they can go forward on the spiritual path. So he must have seen that, as I see from time to time, that many of us are stuck knowing these truths with the mind rather than experiencing the spirit. So let's just jump right in. He says, "Good afternoon," he says. "The work last night should provide you with a tremendous principle in the functioning of every detail of your life and your family, business, or profession." Now, if you recall, if you heard last week's talk, he brought up two principles. One was the realization of the non-power of the carnal mind, and the second part of that was realization of the activity of the Christ in consciousness. And so by realizing the nothingness of the carnal mind and resting in an awareness of Christ in consciousness, or spirit illuminating consciousness, you have the whole entire secret of living the infinite way. And that's what he's saying. It should give you a tremendous principle for all of your affairs. Now, he says, you cannot get away from the fact that carnal mind is operating in every department of your human affairs. I know that's hard for students to swallow. It's hard to assimilate that truth, because when you really start looking at it, you're left with the feeling, well, then what's the use? My entire life is carnal mind, because it's in every department of my human affairs. And then you can get a little afraid, because you hear the principle that God's not in the human scene. And then you get scared. Well, I'm living in the human scene, and there's no God in it. I'm in trouble. So you don't give this truth to the new student because they don't know what to do with it. Indeed, many of these students who attended these talks in Hawaii with Joel were students that had been with him for many, many years. And so he felt that these students were ready. And those of you who are ready can assimilate this truth. And you will not stand there afraid. Instead, you will ask yourself, what can I do about it? What can be done? What do I need to do? So he says, you cannot get away from the fact the carnal mind is operating in every department of your human affairs. Therefore, just realize that it's operating, but always impersonalize it. In other words, do not try to find the carnal mind in Bill. It is always an impersonal operation, even when it is appearing as an individual. So that's one of the principles that Joel found was very freeing. It set him free and set others free to impersonalize. This is an impersonal universe, in case you didn't know it. And it occurred to me one time that all error is impersonal. There's no person there doing it. It's this universal, impersonal, carnal mind, or world beliefs, operating and appearing as a person, but not a person. And then I took a look at the other side of the coin, at this impersonal Christ. Christ is not a man that lived 2,000 years ago, or a man that lived 50 years ago. Christ is an impersonal presence, an impersonal spirit, an impersonal being. It may appear as a person, but it's impersonal. And so as I looked at that, it occurred to me, well, now wait a minute. Error is impersonal. There's no person there. Christ is impersonal. There's no person there. So where is the person? And you're left knowing that there is no person. Nowhere on earth is there a person. And if that's shocking, then you, well, you must look at what Joel said. It's not easy to stop seeing human beings, but I finally made it. All right, so this chapter has to do with recognizing that you know nothing. And that's where he goes next. If you were to receive a warning that at 12 o'clock tonight there would be a tidal wave, you would have to admit, frankly, that you do not know what to do about it. The fact is that you do not know, nor does anyone else. The only thing you could do was to get very quiet in this minute, go within, and keep listening until something within you acknowledged itself. And that's his whole secret of spiritual healing right there in a couple sentences. We thought he knew all these truths, didn't we? Because he was able to stand in front of an audience and speak for an hour or two about spiritual truth, which is really the truth about the truth, or a concept about the truth. Because he was able to stand there and talk to us, we thought he knew hundreds and hundreds of truths. Yet if you really investigate, if something inside of you says, what did he do? How did he do these things? And you really investigate, you'll find out he didn't. It was the absence of Joel that allowed this thing to happen. And that experience took place in every meditation. And if it didn't, he repeated it again an hour later. And so you find that he means it when he says, you would sit down and you would not try to do anything. You would wait for God to do it. Now this is somewhat misleading. You have to ask yourself, every time you hear a talk or a tape or read a book based on some of the talks, you have to ask yourself, or you would be wise to ask yourself, who was his audience? Because in this case, it's students that have been practicing for quite a while. It's not the babes. No, it's more mature students, and he's able to give them meat. And so when he says to them, you would sit down, and you would not try to do anything, you would wait for God to do it, he's not talking to the new student that would say, okay, okay, and they sit down and try to force the mind to be quiet and wait for some mysterious God to do something. It won't work. You know it won't work. And they'll soon discover it doesn't work. They'll probably go on to other things because it doesn't work. Unless there's an inner yearning and something in them that says this is the right path, they'll probably drop it very quickly and say, no, this doesn't work. I've got to find a way to get a healing. And they'll move on to something else, maybe one of the mental sciences. But this is for people that have been in this for a while, and he's talking to them. And he knows that when he says you would wait for God to do it, that the students that you know how to meditate, how to wait for this inner movement, for this light to shine. And so you know what he means when he says you would not try to do anything, because perhaps you were with them in 1947. Now it's 1963. And so perhaps you've been with them all these years, and you remember the Kailua study when he said, you have to practice several times a day saying, no answer to this, and just stop. And hopefully you've been practicing that for a while, and so you are an advanced student in that you know now what he means when he says you wait for God to do it. So, he says, your attitude would be, do not tempt me to know anything. Now see, that's exactly the same as turning to the mind when it starts to know all these truths and rehearse all these truths, turning to the mind and saying, no answer to this, and gritting your teeth, remember? That's the same thing, just different words. When you turn to that mind and say, do not tempt me to know anything. And this is so beautiful where he says, you can just feel it. He says, in this work you get calls from people who have 6 fatal diseases and they're dying from all 6 of them. Unless you can acknowledge that you know even less than they know, you can't be of any help. He says, in Boston I had the case of a woman who came to me with 32 body cancers and I nearly laughed out loud. The reason I wanted to laugh was because at that time I had a case of a person who had 1 cancer and I was sitting up all night with it. And why was he sitting up all night with it? Why would you sit up all night with something? Because you haven't met it. And why are you not meeting it? Because there's an it you think you have to meet. And here he is struggling, trying to meet this one with 1 body cancer. And this one comes along, I've got 32 body cancers, and you want to laugh. But that in that laughter is beautiful, is beauty, because in that laughter is a giving up. Okay, yes, a recognition. What am I trying to do? I can't meet this. And so he says the safest thing to do is to admit that you do not know anything. And sit down and let, and that's in italics, let something inside reveal itself. He says, I want you to know that in 4 days, not one of those 32 cancers was left. Why? Because he was so, in that laughter, he released himself in any attempts to know anything. And I bet he wasn't sitting up all night anymore. No, because in that, he let something inside reveal itself in the next meditation. And then it was met, but it wasn't met by him. It was met by Christ. And Christ is released when there is no him trying to do something. Each case is new to me, he says, and this is the safest way. Otherwise, you're really depending on something in your mind, and nothing in your mind has spiritual power. See, you're not going to God, you're going to mind. You're going to mind. And how scary is that? Mind is powerless. You know, we hear the saying, or we read the saying, if you can name it, it is not that. And we think, oh, how clever, what a clever saying. Yes, of course, if you could name it God, then of course you have a finite concept and it's not that. And how clever a saying, if you can name it, it is not that. Well, isn't that just beautiful? I'll put it on a poster or a 3x5 card and pin it to my wall over there, and I can read it every day. But when I sit down to meditate, I'm still going to name it. Aren't I? Because I'm going to all the truths I have stored up in my mind. All the statements of truth. All the statements about truth. I'm going to all the statements about God. And I'm relying on them. And so I'm going to mind. And I'm relying on mind, which has no spiritual power whatsoever. Whatsoever. Here he says it in one sentence. Every single day from the moment you awaken in the morning, you must treat this day as though you had never lived before and go within for something new. Because truth declared with your mind has no power. No, it's clouds without rain. And you're going to die of thirst. You can turn to your mind and pray and pray and pray and rehearse all the truth you know and bring out those statements of truth memorized. And it has no power. And the cancer consumes you. Or you can do like Joel is suggesting in this chapter and realize, I haven't the slightest idea and there's nothing in my mind or memory that knows. And now I'm done with all that. And maybe you'll have that little laughter. How silly of me to even try. It's ridiculous. Now, Father, speak. But remember, this is not words you rehearse either, because that would be going to the mind. It's an attitude, he says. An attitude. And so you have an attitude of openness or receptivity. Again, it's not a thought. And so this may bring you to the point where you're able to say, how ridiculous, and let go in your meditation, and let something invisible reveal itself. And when that something flows, then the light shines in your consciousness. God is a living experience. And when the light shines, the darkness disappears, it dissipates. And you say, oh, so that's how it works. I see now. And there's a healing. You know you didn't do it. You know you don't know how it actually happened. But you do know that when the light shines in consciousness, the darkness dissipates. And you're excited and you're happy and you want to tell somebody about it, but you don't. And then the phone rings and someone has a problem and you sit down and you close your eyes to meditate and immediately you forgot, and the mind starts spouting off all these memorized truths, and there you are relying on the mind again. And it takes practice. It takes practice, and he's going to tell you what will happen when you have developed consciousness to the point where you don't have to consciously remember, because your consciousness is the light shining. And this is very important here on the next page where he says, when we say error is not power, it is an incomplete sentence. And he says that all over the place in his writings. We should first complete the sentence by saying, error is not power in the presence of an illumined consciousness. Without Christ consciousness, evil can go on and on and on. A cold can become worse and end in death. So, what is this illumined consciousness? It behooves us all to find out, because in the presence of illumined consciousness, of an illumined consciousness, error is not power. And so the only way to meet error is with an illumined consciousness. And an illumined consciousness is not a mind that's knowing and rehearsing memorized truth. No. Illumined consciousness is a consciousness filled with the light of Christ. You know, even if you have thoughts of truth all day, and you have loving thoughts of the people around you, that's not an illumined consciousness. You can have your thoughts filled with love for the people around you, and error can flourish in your life and in theirs. Because that's not a consciousness, an illumined consciousness. That's a human consciousness filled with feelings of love and memorizations of statements of truth. You see? You see? I know you see. You're beginning to feel it, aren't you? There's a big difference in knowing the truth and being the truth. He says, my writings are probably full of this bad habit, that error is not real and it has no power. But that's an incomplete statement. because air does have power until it comes in contact with an illumined consciousness. So there's no use saying there's no darkness. There is darkness until light is introduced. Yes, if you're walking around saying there is no darkness or there is no air, those are the vain repetitions that Christ Jesus said don't do. Don't do that. So he says, always remember that the appearance of evil in any form will dissolve in the presence of illumined consciousness. So there it is again. In the presence of illumined consciousness, evil in any form will dissolve. Well, I better find out how to get this illumined consciousness then, hadn't I? Illumined consciousness is, of course, not human consciousness with knowledge. Aha! So there it is, plain and simple. If your human mind is filled with knowledge and statements of truth, that is not illumined consciousness, and it will not dissolve error. What then? What is illumined consciousness? I suggest you go within and you ask. Father, God, Christ of my being, what is illumined consciousness? Show me. Says Joel, illumined consciousness is the consciousness that has received impartations of the Spirit. Then it makes no difference what the appearance is, as long as you do not try to meet it with your mind or your knowledge. Because there's only one way in which error can be met, and that's by non-resistance, putting up the sword, waiting until your release comes within, and then watch it. All right, so we're back to the Kahlua study series. You need to have 12 times a day, 1 to 2 minutes in which you can say, no answer to this, clamp your teeth shut. Father, reveal thyself. What is illumined consciousness? Shine thy light, and then shut up. Be quiet. I say that to my mind, shut up. I'm listening now, and I'm not listening for you. Because it doesn't want to be quiet. It wants to spew out all these memorizations of truth. And I know that won't heal anything. I have enough experience to know that's useless. Absolutely useless. Oh, it may impress somebody around you, but it won't heal anything, not even a headache. You're going to stay broke if you're relying on that for your supply. I guarantee you. All right, so illumined consciousness dissolves error. Error is power and will continue to operate without illumined consciousness. But when illumined consciousness, when a consciousness filled with light appears, then the appearance of error dissolves. So we better get this illumined consciousness or find out what it is, and turn within until we receive impartations from it. Now, this is in 1963, just 10 months before he moved into the invisible, and he flatly declares, I have no control over this day, and nothing I know will control this day. I had better sit down and let the Spirit of God be upon me. And there you go. So this is the way that we are all living. And as advancing students, we should be moving away from any reliance on the mind or knowledge. We should be moving towards reliance on impartations of the Spirit. So he says, you might as well make up your mind that whether it is a simple cold or whether it is a cancer, you can do nothing about it. Let And then on the next page, he says, let none of our leaders assume they have authority. They can reveal principles and they can be of help, but their function is to build up students so they will be fed from within. Never is a leader to deprive anyone of this. Never. And that's kind of a pet peeve with me. I do not like spiritual teachers or spiritual organizations that say that this is the only way and this is the only truth, because it's nonsense, absolute nonsense. I myself have led people to a study of the infinite way, but I have also led them to a study of self-inquiry, which is a different method of self-realization or God-realization. I have led people with problems with addictions and alcoholism to AA and NA, where they can find the 12 steps and come into a meditation there, the 11th step, and have the experience of God. And I have led people away from the infinite way who are getting no benefit from it. And perhaps some of them have turned to the mental sciences where they feel more at home. But I recognize that there are as many ways to God as there are souls of men. And so I do not claim that this is the only way, ever. And when I hear statements coming out of Arizona or California that says we have the only real infinite way and the only real practitioners, and when I go to the Joel Goldsmith website and I read the master this and the master that, I recognize that they're putting the veil back on truth. And in a little while, we won't have it anymore. Oh, we may have a great organization called the Infinite Way. Maybe we'll even have Infinite Way churches. And maybe we'll have little plastic Joel Goldsmiths we can put on the dashboard of our car. But we won't have the Christ. That's the only thing we'll be missing. So, I always try to point out that the truth, the Christ, the Spirit, the living God is within your consciousness, and it is there. That is the only authority. I remember when I first met Herb, the very first day I walked into his hotel room for the private session, I said, I need to tell you, you are not my teacher. I have a teacher, and the teacher is within. And he never even batted an eye. So, when you read websites online that say this person's not the real truth and that person's not the real truth, I suggest you go somewhere else. All right, so, getting back to this last page. Spiritual power is God, and spiritual wisdom is knowing that you know nothing, and then going within. Now, this is, again, like I said, 10 months, 300 days, just 300 days, or maybe less, maybe 200 some odd days, before he passed to the invisible. He had healed thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of people, he admits it, and elsewhere in his writings. Listen to what he says here to the advancing students. I do not know how people are healed, and for this I am glad. We do not know how God works, but we do know that God does work by the effects. Yes, by their fruits. If you are turning away from the mind and knowing the truth with the mind, and instead you are receiving impartations, and those impartations not only quiet you and not only give you my peace, but then you see the darkness dissolving, and whoever has turned to you also sees that dissolving, then by those fruits you know God does work through that method, through you. Says Joel, I do know this. There is a spirit in man, and this spirit must be allowed to be released. And then the appearances dissolve. And that's really, truly about all I know. But I know that more than anything else, that is what I rely upon. Not those words down there that I just read. Not the thoughts about it. But the entering into it with my soul. Receiving the Spirit. And birthing the Christ. This I know to be true. Do not get the idea that error is not power. No, don't ever say that. That's a vain repetition. Just remember that it is not power in the presence of spiritual power or spiritual illumination. No form of error can survive in the presence of illumined consciousness. Illumined consciousness is really the release of the Spirit within. The more we develop consciousness to the place where we can sit down in the face of any appearance and wait for the Spirit to move, we bring ourselves to the place where it can happen. Now, nobody knows what truth is, but if you are still enough, it, truth, will come through and do everything for you. So the safest place to be is that place where you know nothing. It is so wonderful to be taught of God each day, to know you know nothing, and then be taught again fresh the next day. And that's really the whole hidden manna of the infinite way, which is next week's chapter, Hidden Manna, the Real Infinite Way. So, having read this chapter and dwelt upon it, I asked myself, what is this spiritual illumination he's talking about, since this is the only thing that will meet error and dissolve it? What is it? And, naturally, it came to me, wait a minute, there's a chapter in the original book called Spiritual Illumination, so let's take a look at it. And I went and I got my book, and I took a look. And do you know something? I haven't read this chapter and studied it in many years, because the one before it I liked so much, called Putting on Immortality, I kind of forgot about this chapter called Spiritual Illumination. But when I picked it up and opened it up and started reading, I was absolutely amazed, because all these new things had been entered in here since I saw it last. I think somebody wrote things in here while I was sleeping or something, because I never saw these things before. So let's look at a few of them, shall we? Spiritual illumination enables us to discern the spiritual reality where the human concept appears to be. Ah, that's beautiful. That's exactly what I'm always saying to you guys. Spiritual sense discerns the reality of that which is appearing as concept. Now back over here in Putting on Immortality, if you recall, he says, let us, and that's in italics, then begin with the understanding that our world is not an erroneous one, but rather that the universe in which we live is the realm of reality, about which we entertain a false concept. And so the work of bringing health and harmony into our experience is not then getting rid of or changing a mortal material universe, because there is none. This is a spiritual universe. No, the work is in correcting the finite concept of our existence. So there you go. We said last week and the week before and the week before, and we're saying it again this week, that there is no material universe to fix or heal or change. No, the material universe is a series of concepts about reality. And so, of course, there's no God in the human scene, because there's no God in these concepts. God is in reality, not in the concepts. And so our work, he said, is not changing something out there, but and not trying to wrestle with these concepts by putting more concepts of truth on top of them. No, our work is to turn away from all concepts. Stand ye still and see. Spiritual illumination. The Christ light shining. And then it dissolves concepts. Both concepts of bad and concepts of good. And then we look out here and the world seems to improve. There's a healing. But now we know we haven't really changed anything out there. But the light has dissolved mortal material concepts. And that's our work. The work is an inner work. And that's what he's saying. So let's look at this first paragraph again. Spiritual illumination enables us to discern the spiritual reality where the human concept appears to be. Material sense sees what it believes and then believes what it sees. Spiritual sense discerns the reality of that which is appearing as concept. The development of spiritual consciousness begins with our first realization that what we are beholding through sight, hearing, tasting, touching, and smelling is not the reality of things. Disregarding appearances entirely, the first ray of spiritual illumination or spiritual realization brings us hints of the divine, the eternal, and immortal. And this in turn makes the appearance even less real to us, thereby admitting even greater illumination. So if we want to experience spiritual illumination, which dissolves error, and if error is power always, except when it comes in contact with spiritual illumination, then we must find out how to do this. And he tells us we must turn within, go within several times a day and at night if we awaken, to develop this ability to turn away from thoughts and concepts and receive impartations of light. And it is the light that dissolves material sense or personal sense. The human seeing is entirely misconception through misperception. Any thought of helping, healing, correcting, or changing the material picture must be relinquished in order that we may see the ever-present reality. So you see, when we are told that we must let God reveal itself, the hint is that we must relinquish or let go of any thought of healing, correcting, or changing this picture. All of that must be let go in order that we may see ever-present reality, that which is always here. And he says, of course, in the New Horizon, if I can find it here, the experience does not come until a great measure of our desire for the things of this world has been overcome. You see? And that's the same thing. We must relinquish thoughts of healing, correcting, changing, turning the evil into the good, or even dissolving the evil. We have to relinquish all of that. All of those thoughts have to go because we have to come to a place where we stop. The person has to stop. Remember, Joel got out of the way in his meditations and became a beholder. He says, you let God reveal itself and you bear witness, you watch. This inflow of illumination will continue, he says, until we come to the full realization of our true identity as the light of the world. Then he gives you some clues. Illumination first brings peace, then confidence and assurance. It brings rest from the world's contest, and then all good flows to us through grace. In this chapter, the quote that we all know is what he has in the front of all of the Infinite Way books. Illumination dissolves all material ties and binds men together with the golden chains of spiritual understanding. It acknowledges only the leadership of the Christ. We know that. And he ends that paragraph by saying, "The illumined walk without fear by grace." And that's what happens to us. We learn to live not by might, not by our physical efforts, nor by power, not by our what we know in the mind, not even memorized statements of truth, not even the truth that we received within yesterday, the impartations we received yesterday, our yesterday's manna. We can't even live by that. But we learn to go within, stand stock still, and receive new, fresh impartations. We learn to stand still and watch the Christ light shine. Then it dissolves these concepts and appears as a healing out here. That's living by grace. That's grace. That you can always turn within. That the Spirit, the Christ, is always shining. And when self is out of the way, you bear witness to this light. That's grace. That's living by grace. And so the illumined walk without fear, without a struggle, because they live by grace. So in the realization that we are individual through infinite spiritual consciousness, we need give no consideration to the evidence of the senses. Now that's important. That means you don't have to try to heal that picture, that which is appearing to be out there. It means exactly what it says. You can give no consideration to the evidence of the senses. In your meditation, you can turn within to receive this grace. And as he said in the other book, you can wait for God to do it. But do it. What does that mean? You can wait for God to reveal itself. That light shining dissolves personal sense. So it's a spiritual illumination reveals the harmony of being and dispels the evidence of material sense. It does not change anything in the universe, for this is a spiritual universe peopled with children of God. But the illumination changes our concept of the universe. So there we go. You see, it's an internal experience. An internal experience. We are to have this spiritual illumination which dissolves concepts of mortality. On the next page, he says, "In worshiping Jesus, men lost the Christ. Yes, and in worshiping Joel, you also lose the Christ. Do not set Joel on a pedestal and think he was the only son of God. He was special. He was unique. One of a kind. Because that's not true. There is one child of God, one Christ child. And all that is that Christ child, appearing as infinite form and variety. But remember, we're getting behind the appearance. We're walking behind the veil. And if we put the veil back on and say this one and that one is special and spiritual and someday I'll be there, then we lose the Christ. But if we keep the veil off and we say, no, there's one God, one Son, and all is that Son, and I need to come into the awareness of it. I need to have the inner realization of it. So I will stop trying to use the body or the mind. I will be still. I will stand stock still. Now, Father, reveal thyself." Or, what is spiritual illumination? Or, Christ, reveal thyself. Or, Christ, flow. and then stand still. Stop. And when the Spirit moves, you have found the Christ. So he says spiritual illumination does not come from a person, but from the impersonal Christ. And there you go. Christ is not a person. Never see Christ as a person. Remember, he was told in his meditation, you must seek the impersonal Christ and impersonal healing. And that's exactly what we're doing. Illumined consciousness dispels personal sense of self. It reveals the real self, capital S self. So we have said, or we have been told, instructed, you must die and be born again. How? How do I die? You can't do it with your mind. You cannot get a hold of yourself and kill it. That's not going to work. No, you can't force the mind to be quiet or the self to disappear. But in the stillness, in the silence, when you stop, when there's no personal effort, then illumination, illumined consciousness, the light can shine, and it dispels a personal sense of self. So, the real self is revealed as we retire within ourselves each day and there learn to listen and to watch. See, we listen. It's not a listening with your physical ears. It's a being receptive, a tuning in. I remember somebody saying 40 years ago that she meditated just like when she was a child. She would put her ear on the railroad tracks and she could hear the train coming from miles away. I thought that was so beautiful. So beautiful. That's the way we meditate. We listen. We tune in. And then, when the movement is upon us and we feel it, then we watch. We watch what it reveals. And it reveals that the darkness is not real, that in its place, I am real. When consciousness is afire with truth, it destroys all sense of fear, doubt, hate, envy, disease, and discord. Yes, when illumination or the light shines in your consciousness, it dissolves. So recognize every evil appearance as a false perception of harmony. You see, what is this that is appearing to me? This is a concept, a false concept about spirit. But I can't get rid of it. I can't wrestle with it. I can't stay up all night like Joel and wrestle with this thing like Jacob. No, I've got to let it go. Got to let it go. And stand still. Father, reveal what is here. And then there's a feeling of reality, of the presence. I don't make that happen. I watch it happen. And then some form of self or concept or appearance dissolves. Only illumined consciousness can look upon an evil appearance and perceive the divine reality. Yes, yes, only God can reveal itself where the appearance appears. So it says spiritual illumination reveals that we are not mortals, not even humans. We are pure spiritual being. This light destroys the illusions of personal sense. The illumined walk without fear by grace. The understanding that what we see, hear, taste, touch, or smell through the five physical senses is the finite concept of reality and in no way related to the spiritually real, is spiritual sense or illumination. Christ consciousness beholds God everywhere shining through the mist of personal sense. Look at that. That is such a beautiful sentence. Christ consciousness. That's what your consciousness is when self is out of the way and thoughts are out of the way in the silence. Christ consciousness beholds God everywhere, shining through the mist of personal sense. I love that. I in the midst of you. There's an I standing in the midst of this personal sense, but you cannot feel it or know it, because you're hearing and seeing and tasting and touching and smelling personal sense. But in the midst of this, in the very midst of this, is an I Christ, a reality in the midst. But to see it, you must die to self in this moment, just in this moment. You must die to any effort, the non-power of silence. No effort, no thought-taking, nothing. Standing still, taking that step off the cliff. Are there really the everlasting arms to catch you? Come, follow me, and find out. Spiritual illumination dispels the false concepts or images of finite sense and reveals all being as God appearing. Yes, the light in individual consciousness reveals the world of God's creating. I have overcome the world means I have overcome the images, the concepts. So now you see it's not something that the great Jesus Christ could only do as an individual, only Son of God. No, it's something within reach of all of us. I have overcome these concepts, these images, by standing still and receiving spiritual illumination. The light in individual consciousness reveals the world of God's creating, the universe of reality, the children of God. In this light, the mortal sense disappears. The world of concepts, this world, gives place to my kingdom, the reality of things seen as they are. We feel an inner warmth, a living presence, a divine assurance. We are never alone, and we know it. This sweet presence gives us an inner rest. And we abide in this consciousness, this presence of love. This truth dispels every illusion of sense and reveals the infinite harmony of your being. It dispels mortality and reveals your immortality. See, there's a your immortality standing in the very midst of you. Again, the kingdom is within, not within like you go from the outside of your house within your house. No, the kingdom of God is within you in the sense that blue and red are mixed together, and within blue and red is purple. You see, in the midst of you within, in the midst of you I stand. There's an I, a Christ self, standing in the midst of you, within you. About 500 BC it was written. Now this is how it feels to experience inner illumination in your meditation. So listen. About 500 BC it was written. It easily happens that a man, when taking a bath, steps upon a wet rope and imagines that it is a snake. Horror will overcome him, and he will shake from fear, anticipating in his thought all the agonies caused by the serpent's venomous bite. Yes, that's the same as you saying, I am out of money. Where am I going to live? I have no money. I have lack and limitation. I don't see how I'm going to pay my bills. It's the same as you quaking in fear because the doctor says you have a melanoma. It's the same as you quaking in fear because you have lost a loved one and you do not know how you are ever going to not be alone again. But then what a relief does this man experience when he sees the rope is no snake. The cause of his fright lies in his error, his ignorance, his illusion. If the true nature of the rope is recognized, his tranquility of mind will come back to him. He will feel relieved. He will feel joyful and happy. This is the state of mind of one who has recognized there is no personal self. And so the answer is not to add supply to a personal self, or add health to a personal self, or add companionship to a personal self. No, the answer is to awaken, to have this inner realization that there is no personal self, and to come into the ability to see spiritual supply, spiritual companionship, spiritual health, to see that the reality of all that God has is right here, right now. That's the answer. It's God's supply, God's health, God's life, God's companionship. Come into an awareness, an actual feeling of that as personal self dissolves. And then you will have this experience. What a relief. Yeah, it's much deeper than that, though. Illumination reveals there is no error. What appears as error, sin, disease, death, is reality itself misperceived by the senses. So the discords are not to be hated, feared, resented, or healed. No. The discords are to be reinterpreted. But you, the person, cannot do the reinterpreting. It's not a mental exercise. The reinterpreting is done when spirit shines, moves within you. When the mind is still, then spirit reinterprets the scene and reveals reality. So I wrote down here, personal self is reality misperceived. See? If you're seeing a personal self or experiencing yourself as a personal self, you are misperceiving your real self. And you're living in that misperception. But I am the resurrection. I am personal Christ. I am the resurrection. Get out of the way and I will resurrect. It must be understood that no illusion is or ever can be externalized. And I was pretty amazed when I found that in this chapter, because I've been saying that and quoting it from A Parenthesis in Eternity, from the chapter Reality and Illusion, and thinking that that's the only place he put it. And it was right here in his very first book, because of course Joel had the consciousness way back in 1947. And he's trying to lift these students up here in 1963 into the same consciousness for those that are ready. And so it must be understood or realized within you that no illusion is or ever can be externalized. It has to be realized at depth, so you'll stop trying to work on them. Even trying to know truths and throw truths at them mentally is working on trying to change something external. But once you've really had this at depth realization, then you will stop working on things out there, even stop trying to heal them. You will stop staying up all night. You will simply turn within and let go of trying to do something mentally or physically, and let the spirit shine. Because only the spirit can reinterpret for you. He says, we are being faced with discordant appearances all through the day and night. These must be immediately translated through our understanding of the new tongue, the language of spirit, Yes, only the spirit can reinterpret, not a mind. Each use of spiritual faculties results in greater spiritual perception, which in turn reveals more and more of the light. So, translate the pictures and incidents of daily existence into the new tongue, spirit, and consciousness will expand until translation occurs without taking thought. It becomes a state of consciousness, a constant awareness of truth. But remember, the impersonal does this, not you. It's the impersonal Christ. The impersonal Christ healing, or the impersonal Christ revealing, or the impersonal Christ reinterpreting. So, eventually it becomes constant state of awareness without taking conscious thought. Our every good unfolds to view without conscious effort. And finally, spiritual illumination enables us to relax our personal efforts and rely more and more on divinity unfolding and revealing itself as us. Now, I hope that makes plain that this week's talk was so that you might turn within, let go of the need to remember statements of truth, stand stock still, receive impartations or the movement of spirit or Christ light shining, and watch, simply watch, behold, as darkness dissolves. And you'll never know exactly how that works, but you will know that it does work. You will know that when spirit reveals itself, the concept dissolves. And out here it appears as if harmony appears. But you will know that it is really the Christ light shining. You will know it's spiritual illumination. And when you get to that place where it's a constant state of awareness, where it begins living itself and revealing itself without your effort, you will discover that the Christ is living you. Now, it's much more than a statement of truth or a memorized truth or something even that Paul knew once upon a time. Now it will be your living life, your living experience. I live here, yet not I. Christ in the midst is living. And then, of course, you'll be able to, like Joel, meet 300 cases of flu in one day. Because as fast as the calls come in, you will stand still and watch this Christ illumination say simply, I will take care of it. I will handle it. Leave it with me. Okay. I will take it. I will take it from here. I will work for you. And you'll simply stand still and watch the light shine. Now we know the depth of dying to a personal sense of self so that Christ may live and stand and function. Now we see it's a little bit more than something we can just know with the mind, isn't it? It's a much deeper experience. But we're ready. For this cause came we into the world, that we might know Christ, that we might know God aright, whom to know aright is life eternal. Our eternal life. When you know God aright, you know your own eternal life, for these are one. Well, we've used up an hour here, so I guess I'd better say fare thee well and put this into practice. It's in the practice that you awaken. And my friends, thank you so much for drawing this out. Thank you.